Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the top of daf Lamed Hey Omid Aleph, you will notice about a little more than 10 lines from the top. At the end of the line, there is the beginning of a Tanaic source, Omar Lohem Rabbi Yehuda. As you can note, a Tanaic source from the fact that it's in a frame. In our marking system, we frame off Tanaic sections to distinguish it from the rest of the Gemara text. In addition to the markings that we provide in the text itself, we also have topic headings and structural notes that appear in the outside margin. They are entitled the Nosei, the topic, and Mivneh, the structure. In this case, we have combined them together, the Nosei and the Mivneh, and we also have a trapezoid or volcano shape, and they represent Kushios, Al Shitas HaChachomim, the Omru, Shepokikin HaAzoro, Kedei Shiyechu HaKlehanim Bedam. We are going to see a Tanaic source that says that at the time that they were processing the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, there were, of course, many, many, many animals being slaughtered, and a great deal of dam was accumulated. The dam hanefesh, of course, they were makabel in a kli and a mizrok, but there was also other dam that accumulated on the floor. The source describes the scene as they had plugged up the exit holes from the floor of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash Azorah courtyard, in the area in which the animals were slaughtered, so as to create a situation that the blood of the korbanos would accumulate on the floor. This was described in the previous sugya that we dealt with regarding the issue of the possibility of the dam of one of the korbanos spilling out from the kli. We saw a suggestion that one would collect the dam from the floor and use that for the zrikas hadam. So in light of that discussion, the Gemara here picks up from that phenomenon. However, if in fact the floor would accumulate with the blood of the korbanos, first of all, why was that? And does it not present certain problems? The markings in the Gemara have the beginning of the questions with the trapezoid form, the volcano form around them. So you can, if you glance ahead, you can see, does the dam accumulation not present a problem of chatzitza? That's one of the questions. Chatzitza being the presence of an interposition. There is a necessity of the Kohanim walking around on the floor of the Azorah that their feet, in fact they were barefoot, should be in direct contact with the stone floor of the Azorah. But if there's dam there, so the dam, does it not serve as a block or an interposition between the floor and the bottoms of their feet? There will be an answer to that. The Gemara will ask, what about the problem of the clothing of the Kohanim becoming soiled in blood? There is a problem with soiled clothing. That too will be raised and answered. So now, turning to the Gemara itself. Omar Lahem Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says to the Chachomim, L'divrechem, according to you, that did not, you who do not hold like I hold. I, Rabbi Yehuda, as we saw in the previous sugya, say that the floor of the Azorah was plugged up, and they thereby be able to gather a cup of blood and use it as the representative spilled blood for the purpose of a korban whose blood may not have been nizrak, rather had spilled out. So the blood would be available because the floor was plugged up. Any exit holes leading out of the Azorah would be stopped up, creating a certain depth of blood on the floor for that purpose, for the purpose of Dam Shenishpach. But according to you who don't hold from that, so the question is, why did they plug up the floor of the Azorah? L'divrechem, the Gemara says, Lama pokikim hazora. Why do they pokikim plug up the exit holes from the Azora on Erev Pesach? Omru lo, the Chachamim answered Rabbi Yehuda, Shevachu, it was praiseworthy livnei Aaron to the Kohanim, Shealchu an akavuseim badam, that they should walk till they were knee deep in the blood. In other words, the fact that they were wading around, so to speak, in the blood shows their endearment toward the korban sacrifice activity. The question is raised on the Rabbanan Vaha Dam Have Chatzitza. Does the Dam not present a Chatzitza, an interposition? As we mentioned just a moment before, that one was expected to walk directly on the stone floor, and here the floor was covered with blood. So the Gemara answers, Lahu v'lo havi chatzitza. The blood is a liquid. It's literally it's wet, and liquids do not present a problem of chatzitza. Disnan, we have a Tanaic source that bears this point out. Hadam v'adio v'advash v'acholav, blood and dio will ink, dvash honey, and cholav milk. Yaveshim chotzim, if they dried out, they would present a problem of chatzitza. With their respective halachas, in their respective areas, lachin ein chotzesin. But these liquids, if they are lach, they do not present a problem of chatzitza. And when we speak about chatzitza, chatzitza has applications to many different halachas. In this particular case, we're talking about halachas of the one walking on directly on the floor of the azara, so that the dam, which is mentioned in this list, doesn't, in its lach form, in its wet form, doesn't present a problem. But still there's another question. V'hol ka misvasi monayu. Misvasi is soiled, monayu, their clothing. So is it not a problem here that their clothing becomes soiled? Utnan. We have a teaching, a Tanaic source. Hoyu begodov mitushtoshin v'ovad. If the clothing of the Kohanim were dirty, were soiled, avodasa psula, it actually ruins the sacrificial service. V'chitema, and if you suggest demadlahu, that they will pick up the clothing whose length reached close to the floor, they would raise it with the assistance of the avnet, the belt, that and keep it high on their bodies. V'hatanya, we have a Tanaic source that opens up with a pasuk. The pasuk, the word from the pasuk says mido. Mido bad is what you see in the pasuk, and that word equals kemido so. It should be a proper fit. Shelo yechsar vel shelo yosir. Not too short, not too long. So that if they raise it above the ground and keep it in place with their avnet, they're creating a situation where it's chaser, where it's too short. So how do you get around this problem? The problem of the clothing being soiled, and soiled clothing would ruin the avoda. So the Gemara answers, that which they plugged up the azora and thereby walk in the blood, and in fact, yes, raise their clothing, but no problem with regard to ruined avoda, behoilochas evorim lekevesh. This was done while they would be wading around in the blood, while they were carrying limbs of the korbonos to the ramp of the mizbeach, the lav avodahi. This stage, if you will, of carrying the limbs of the korban to the kevesh, or the innards of the korban to the kevesh, did not. Is not considered an avoda, and as such, it's the problem of the clothing doesn't ruin anything. So the Gemara asks, "Velo, is that really so that the holocha sevorim is not an avoda?" V'ha Tanya, v'hikriv hakoyin es hakoyil. That's the pasuk, and it's darshin zu hoylochas evorim lekevesh. That is the carrying of the limbs to the ramp leading up to the mizbeach. So we see from this that the carrying of the limbs to the ramp of the Mizbech is an avoda. So in what was the situation that they plugged up the Azora so that they would walk wade through the blood? Ela, and we have a number two because we tried. Number one was the wading was during the Holochas Evorim. Here we say Ela b'Holochas Eitzim l'Marocha d'Lav Avodahi. They would wade around in the blood for the carrying of the wood to the top of the Mizbeach, to the fireplace on the Mizbeach, on the altar. That carrying of the wood is not an avoda. So as such, we are not concerned with what we said before, that the a problem regarding the clothing would present a problem to the effectiveness of the avoda, because Holochas Eitz Mamrocha is not an avoda. The Gemara asks, Ula avoda hechi asli? And for the actual avoda, for things like the carrying of the dam, how would they, in fact, walk around? We said that they to have their clothing soiled, that would be a problem. To have the clothing raised up on their body, that would be a problem. So the Gemara answers, they would not raise their clothing, but rather, asli a'itztabi, they would walk on stones that were raised. Rashi says, a'itztabi itztabos gvoim, platforms, high platforms, hoyu sham, binyan avonim, they were constructed out of stones, v'einon chutzitzin, the min horitz bahen. These stones, these raised stones, would form platforms that on which they would be able to walk, maintaining a sufficient height above the blood level on the floor of the Azara, and the clothing would not be soiled. There would be no need to have, and because they were raised sufficiently off the ground, they would not have to, of course, raise the clothing above, to raise it on their bodies either. So that solves the that. With that, we're able to accomplish the as the source above said, Sheva Chulivnei Aaron. They demonstrate their love of the korban surface by wading through the blood for the holachas eitzim lamarocha. And when it came to holacha that constitutes an actual avoda, they would walk on the platforms. Hashoichet es hazevach. A person who shechts a korban with a mindset of chutz lizmano or chutz lamkomo for doing something which we will describe, the Mishnah will describe what he has in mind, but it's regarding improper time, beyond the acceptable time, or outside the acceptable place. Before we go further, we have a topic heading, the nosei, machsheves pigul al dvorim she'enam ru'uyin la'achila or haktora. A machsheves pigul is that mindset, the improper mindset, regarding time or place, regarding things that are not fit for eating or for the offering on the altar, for haktora, literally the burning on the mizbeach. So the Mishnah has a number of examples, and they include, let's read from the beginning again, Hashochit es hazevach, le'echol davar she'ein darkoi le'echol ul'haktir, davar she'ein darkoi le'haktir, kosher. If one offers slaughters a sacrifice with the intent of eating a part of the sacrifice that's not normally eaten, or offering something on the Mizbeach that's not normally offered with a mindset, I'm going to eat this abnormal thing 2 days from now, or offer it on the Mizbeach tomorrow, which is, let's say, outside the acceptable time, it doesn't have a negative effect on the sacrifice. Rabbi Eliezer Posel, Rabbi Eliezer says it does have an effect. Lechol dover shadarko lechol lahaktir dover shadarko lahaktir pochos mikazayas. This is a second example. This number two would be read in your mind as you would read the first clause of the Mishnah, Hashochid es hazevach, with the colon, as you could see in the Mishnah. He's slaughtering the korban, and then you would read number two, lechol dover shadarko lechol, etc. Pochos mikazayas. Here, the item is not strange or problematic, but the quantity is. And when we use the term problematic, it works to our benefit. We're talking about something that's going to result, even though there's an improper mindset, the korban actually is acceptable. And the reason here is, even though he is mindset concerned something that is normally eaten, or something that is normally offered on the altar, however, he is thinking about eating a quantity that's less than a kezias, less than an olive size in quantity, or offering on the mizbeach an amount of, let's say, innards. The innards of the animal are generally offered on the mizbeach. He has in mind to offer less than a kezias of innards. Such a mindset does not ruin the sacrifice. A third mindset or example, and once again, you would read in your mind, Hashochid es hazevach, and number three, Le'choil kechatzi zayas, u'lehaktir kechatzi zayas. He has in mind to eat a half zayas and offer a half zayas, let's say, outside the acceptable time frame, say tomorrow. Kosher shein achil of haktorah mitstarfin. This is the korban is kosher because a mindset concerning on the one hand a chatzi shiur of eating and a chatzi shiur, half a quantity of offering, two, let's say, half olive quantities, one of eating and one of offering, do not add up to form a full quantity of an olive size. Hashochid es hazevach le'echol kezayas min. Now there is a long list of items here, and these are all items that are not generally eaten. So he shechts a korban with the kavonati of eating an olive quantity of min ha'or, of skin, min ha'roitev, of the gravy that forms when one is cooking the meat of a sacrifice. Umin ha'kipa. Kipa are shreds, little shreds of meat that form at the bottom of the pot. Umin ha'olo, the neck sinews. Umin ha'atzamos, from the bones. Umin ha'gidim, sinews of the animal. Umin ha'karnayim, horns. Umin ha'tlafayim, the hooves. Chutzlizmano, the chutzlim komo, if he has a mindset of eating any of these things outside the right time or outside of the right place, kosher, the korban remains kosher. The ein chayovim aleihem mishum pigol v'noisor v'tomei. And there is no problem of pigol. That would mean that this would be a case of where he had an incorrect mindset regarding the korban itself. That's a slightly different case than that which we just read. What we just read was where his mindset was focused on these items. This halacha, when it says ein chayavim aleihem mishum pigol, this is a situation where the rest of the animal is pigol. He slaughtered the korban, let us say, to eat the meat 3 days from now. That would make the entire korban pigol. However, let us say he would eat from the horns. He would boil up the horns or the bones of that animal and eat from it. So the Mishnah is telling us there would be no violation of pigol. There's also no problem of nosar. Nosar is a separate problem of korban left over beyond the right time. And vitome, and the problem of impurity, would not affect these parts of the animal. Hashochin es hamukdoshim. Lechol shlil oy shilya bachutz lo pigel. The Mishnah describes a person who shechts a korban with the intention of eating the embryo or the placenta outside of the Beis HaMikdash, or outside of the legitimate eating area. If it's Kotshim Kalam, it would be outside of Yerushalayim. It does not create pigel. That would show us something about the nature of the embryo with regard to the rest of the animal. Rashi says in very short words that delav gufei dezivchahu. It shows us that the embryo is not viewed as a part of the body of the animal, of the mother. Hamolek es haturim. One malika is the, we'll call it, for lack of better expression, the method of slaughtering a bird offering. Turin is one of the types of kosher bird offerings. So one does the malika of the turin, the bird offering, with the intent of le'chol beitzein bachutz, with the intent of eating its eggs outside of the proper eating area. Lo pigel. That does not create a problem of pigel with regard to this Chatas Ha'of. So here you have another example of an intention focused on something that's not considered part of the animal, even though it's found inside the animal, but it's not considered gufe de zivcha or gufe de oif. Cholav mukdashim ubeitzei torin ein chayav v'maleim mishum pigul v'noiser v'tomei. The milk of a sacrifice or the eggs of a bird offering, the Mishnah says ein chayav v'maleim mishum pigul. This is similar to the case above where he had kavona not on the milk itself or on the eggs itself, but rather he had kavona, he had an intention regarding the basic korban, even though the rest of the korban becomes pigul and hence forbidden to eat, these byproducts of the animal are not affected. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rebbe Elazar, we have a firebox around Rebbe Elazar, one of the rare markings. It indicates the focus on a particular sheet, a particular opinion that will occupy the Gemara for at least an omid, if not more. In this case, our focus on Shitas Rebbe Elazar will keep us occupied most of Omid Beis. Before we get into the Gemara itself, let us take advantage of our topic heading. Under the Nosei heading, you see Shitas Rebbe Elazar says as follows: Itochein, it is possible. Itochein davar hamispagel afalpi she'eino mefagel. That you can have a situation that is the victim of an incorrect thought, even though the incorrect thought is focused on it, it does not create pigul with regard to the rest of the animal. We'll read that again. Yitochein dover hamispagel, afagav the eno mifagel, kagon. Example, pigel bezevach, nispagel hashlil. If a person has an incorrect mindset with regard to the meat of the korban, namely, he shechts a korban with the intention of eating the meat beyond, outside of the correct eating time. So the result would be that the embryo in that animal would also become pigul. And if one were to eat from the meat of the embryo, he would be in violation of pigul. Avol. Pigel v'shlil, that would be a situation where he has he shechts the korban, he slaughters the korban with the intention directed on the embryo. In other words, he slaughters the korban with the intention of eating the embryo outside the appropriate sacrificial eating time. Loi nispagel hazevach. We will say that the rest of the korban, that none of this animal is affected. So let's try to say this again. There are items that can become the victim of a pigul thought. In other words, they're the byproducts. They will be the victims of an incorrect thought regarding the animal. However, when the thought is focused on them, they do not serve as a means or a vehicle of rendering the rest of the korban pigul. Omar Rebbe Elazar, we turn to the Gemara, and we have the Gemara numbered off very carefully. We have three examples. In each example, we will focus situations of something being the victim of a pigul thought that takes hold. But that item, which in part Aleph is the victim, when the thought is focused on them, they do not create a situation of pigul with regard to the entire korban. Let us see the examples. Number one, pigel bazevach nispagel hashlil. A person slaughters a korban with the intention of eating the meat outside the beyond the allotted korban time, eating time. The embryo will also become usur, forbidden to be consumed. The idea here being that ubar yerech imahu, the ubar is considered like the leg of the mother. However, that description has its limitations. Beshliel loi nispagel hazevach. we have a little bays here, because in terms of the actual reading, you would imagine the word pigel, and which was labeled number one, and we have a colon after that, so you would read in your mind's eye, pigel bashlil, because the colon serves to distribute the word pigel on the case aleph, pigel bazevach, and pigel bays, pigel bashlil. In other words, he slaughters the korban with the intention of eating the embryo at the outside the allotted korban time, korban eating time. Loi nispagel hazevach. The animal, the sacrifice, does not become pigel. The Rashi explains, the shlil, the embryo, is not something that is normally eaten. And as such, since it's not something normally eaten, the eating mindset that's focused on it does not render the korban to become pigel. Case 2, pigel, and once again, this is broken down, aleph and beis. Pigel ba'olol, nispaglo mura. If a person does malika on a bird offering whose olol, its neck sinews, are soft and hence are edible. So then nispagla mura, the birds, the crop of the bird, becomes pigul. However, b'mura lo nispagel olol. If his incorrect mindset is focused on the mura, the crop, then the olol does not become ruined, doesn't become pigul. Third example, pigel b'emurim nispaglu porim. Here a word of introduction is essential. This section of the Gemara, or this section of Rabbi Lezer's Din, is describing the Purim HaNisrafim. These were korbanos, korban chatos, who were whose dam was slaughtered, was sprinkled on the inside of the heichal, and the animals, the bodies of these animals, were burnt. They were completely burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, in this case, the meat of the animal was not a dover hanecha, was not something that was eaten. The animal would be slaughtered. Its innards were placed, they were maktir, the innards, on the mizbeach, in the azora, and the meat of these animals was burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, pigel beimurim, we're talking about the Purim HaNisrafim. So he slaughtered, let us say, as an example, he slaughtered the Purim HaNisrafim with the kavana of offering the emurim, the innards, which is a normal thing to do, is to offer the innards, however, at the wrong time. That's chutz lizmano. So that's a machshava that takes hold, and as a result of that, nispaglu Purim. The animals, the meat of the animals, becomes pigul. What's important to note is that even though the Purim are generally not eaten, because as we mentioned, they are Purim and Nisrafim, their bodies are completely burnt, but as in line with Rebbe Lozer's general theme here, an item that is itself not generally eaten can become the victim of a pigul thought when the pigul thought is focused on something that is normally done. In this case, the emurim are normally offered on the mizbeach. So he had the incorrect thought regarding the emurim. The Purim can become the victim of that pigul thought. However, b'Purim, if he slaughters the Purim and Nisrafim with the intent of eating the meat outside the right time, lo nispaglu emurim. It has no effect. And the emurim do not become mefugal. And as Rashi says, and if one were to come to eat a kezias of the innards, he would not be over on the Isser of Pigel, which carries with it, by the way, a penalty of kores. As we continue in the Gemara, we now encounter a structure that is going to preoccupy the Gemara till the very end of the sugya. We entitle this Mivneh. On the outside margin, we have triangles that you can see in two directions. This represents a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion. With the point facing up, we will present a siwa, a support l'Rebbe Elazar. When the triangle flips over, that will represent dechios, v'kushios al Rebbe Elazar, either a rejection of the support that was, whatever support was offered, or questions on Rebbe Elazar. In other words, with the point facing down, this will represent some problem with regard to Rebbe Elazar. He'ora, hamispur mitzayin havos mekoros l'matras hanal. We will see a numbering that takes place. The numbering that is to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, triangles will appear that are numbered. What we're trying to say is that not every triangle in the sugya will be numbered, but at any point where a new attempt either to defend Rebbe Elazar or to reject his opinion appears, where a new attempt shows up, it will receive a number. So before we go over the Gemara, we'll go through the text itself. Let's scan the structure. Let's get a bird's eye view. As the Gemara opens up, you'll see it says Lemo Misayale. So we've assigned to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text a triangle with a number 1 with the point facing up. This will be an attempt to support Rebbe Elazar. There will be a back and forth, a little give and take on this. There will be an attempt to support, then a rejection of that support. And then when we turn to Amud Beis, you'll see the second line from the top, a triangle with a number 2 next to it. This will be a new attempted support. And there will follow a discussion, back and forth discussion within the number 2. You'll see then an inverted triangle, number 3. At the end of the line, you'll see the word moisiv, which is, at that point, the Gemara raises a question. It's a new question. It's a question from a new source on Rebbe Elazar. And that will be a long, we've labeled a long question. And after that, the Gemara will attempt to answer the question, and you can see it goes back and forth on that on that discussion as well. When we get to the third wide line, we have Rava appearing and says that we have that our Mishnah could be read with inferences to actually support Rebbe Elazar. Let us now focus on the Gemara text. Lemo Misayale. We're at the bottom, 3 lines from the bottom of Lamed Hei Amud Aleph. Lemo Misayale. Let us suggest the following could be learned as a support to Rebbe Elazar. The quote that we see from a Tanaic source appears more or less in the middle of a discussion, and it says maybe a word of background before reading the source itself. Is that there is a machlokis, Rabbi Shimon and the Chachomim, that we do not see in our Gemara here, but Rashi provides the background. That's found in the Perek Beis Shammai, the next Perek of this Masechta, regarding the application of the Isser Pigol to Parim HaNisrofim. The Rabbanon hold that Pigol is something that is shayach to the Parim HaNisrofim. We discussed them just a few minutes ago. Those are the Parim that are offered. Most of the examples of Parim HaNisrofim are Korban Chatos, that are whose dam is sprinkled in the Heichal. The bodies of these animals are not eaten, but rather they're burnt completely outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Rabbanon hold Pigel is shayach to them. Rabbi Shimon holds that any korban that's not processed on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, where the Sirikas HaDam is not done on the Azora Mizbeach, the major Mizbeach, those kind of korbanas are not subject to Pigel. So we have a machlokis, Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon holding Pigel is shayach to the Parim HaNisrofim, and Rabbi Shimon holds Pigel is not shayach to the Parim HaNisrofim. Now, with that in mind, let's look in the source. Vishavim, there is agreement. There is an agreement between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanon, and we're going to emphasize the Rabbanon will agree to Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbanon who generally hold that Pigel is noheg the Parim HaNisrofim, they will concede Shim Chishev Ba'achilas Porim ubisrei fason lo osa v'loi klum. That if the Parim HaNisrofim are slaughtered with the mindset of eating the meat of the Parim HaNisrofim, or the burning of their bodies on the Beis HaDeshen, which is a burning that's not on the Mizbech, it's a burning outside the Beis HaMikdash. So that if they slaughtered a Parmas Rafim with the Kavona, with the intention of burning the Parmas Rafim tomorrow, in other words, the next day, which is not the right time, it's supposed to be burnt the day that they're slaughtered. Well, even so, lo also v'loklum, that type of incorrect mindset has no hashpah, has no influence. It doesn't have any effect. But we want to draw an inference from this. My lav, is it not so that Ha chishev beimurim? We're working within shitas of Rabbonin right now, and don't forget, Rabbonin hold that pigul is something that shayach to the parim nisrofim. When would that be? Ha chishev beimurim nispaglu parim. If he had an incorrect mindset with regard to the offering of the innards of the parim nisrofim at the wrong time, the innards are something that are offered on the on the mizbeach in the azara. Therefore, since it's something that's normally done on the in the Beis HaMikdash itself, if you have a kavana concerning that, concerning the offering of the innards at the wrong time, the meat of the Parma Srafim becomes pigul. So this would be exactly in lines of Rebbe Lozer's teaching. Notice we have arrows. The arrow here is to be aligned with the arrow a few lines up. That on that line, at the end of the line, the Rebbe Lozer featured his take on the Parim Nisrafim. What did he say? He said, Pigel Beimurim Nispaglu Parim. Let's compare that to what we have dashed underline. Chishe Beimurim Nispaglu Parim. Exactly the same thing. This would then support Rebbe Lozer. Structurally, we also have included a long, at the point of Lema, when the Gemara was asking, can we offer this as a support to Rebbe Lozer? It's essentially a question, and we've labeled it as such, a long question, the Shin She'ela, with a circle around it, and a vertical dashed line indicating that all of these lines of the Gemara formed the question. So can we say that this source supports Rebbe Lozer? Loi. Notice the triangle flips over. So we are not going to offer that as a support to Rebbe Lozer, because we're going to read the inference differently. We're rather ha chishev beimurim nispaglu emurim atzmam, where one has an incorrect thought regarding the emurim themselves become affected. But what we're saying right now is that a machsheves pigul on something that's normally offered will not render something else which is not offered pigul. In this case, the meat of the korban will not become pigul. So this inference is not a support to what Rebbe Lozer said. Let us look at the Rashi at the top, emurim atzmon, and he describes what they are. Yoseres hakoveid vaklayos, different inner organs. Those become pigul. So if one has an intention while he's doing the Parim Nisrafim too, he slaughters the animal with the intention of offering the emurim on the mizbeach at the wrong time, the emurim themselves, these innards, become pigul. The practical outcome would be that if he eats from those innards, he would be oiver on achilas pigul. Rashi continues, avoloi bosar. That's the main point. But the bosar, the meat of the animal, would not become pigul. She'ein mispagel bedovar shehu gufo shel zevach ela dovar hamifagel. Only something that can become, that can initiate the pigul, or the mindset, only that which is capable of creating pigul with regard to the rest of the carbon, can itself, will itself become the victim of the pigul mindset. Let's read that again. She'ein mispagel bedovar shugufo shel zevach ela dovar hamifagel. The kevon de lo choshiv achil in pigul. Let's focus on the meat for a moment. That since the meat is not considered achila regarding pigul, because the meat of the parim nisrofim is not something that is eaten to begin with. It's supposed to be burnt. Lo choshiv nami achilo leinyan if guli. It also cannot become, it's not considered something that's a bar achila with regard to it being the victim of something either. So, since it doesn't generate the pigul, it cannot become the victim of pigul. That's as far as the meat. The emurim, on the other hand, since the emurim can generate the pigul, the emurim can become the victim of the pigul mindset. The victim meaning that if one were to eat from them, he would be over on achilas pigul. Toshma. With the point facing up, we're going to attempt to see a support for Rebbe Lozar. We have a source, three lines. Parim hanisrafim, usirim hanisrafim, the cows that are completely burnt outside of the Beis Hamikdash, and there's a situation where we have goat offerings that also are treated that way. Moyalin bohen mishehukdashu. Ni'ila is the name of the prohibition of deriving benefit from that which is sanctified. So there is a problem of ni'ila, so that's the name of the averas, the isur ni'ila, sets in, this prohibition sets in at the point that they are sanctified. Nishchatu, if they are slaughtered, huchshuru liposel b'tvul yoim uve mechusar kippurim ubalina. Once they are slaughtered, they become susceptible to being ruined by a tvul yom. This is a person who had been tomei and immersed himself in a mikveh, but the sun has not set yet. Uva Mechusar Kippurim is a person who had been tomei, and it's for him the immersion in the mikveh and sunset is not sufficient. He has, on the next day, he needs to bring korbanos. So until he's brought his korbanos, he's called a Mechusar Kippurim. He also has a certain tuma status. Uba lina. Lina is the problem of something being left beyond the correct time. So when does the Isser lina set in? Once the animal has been shechted, so the clock starts ticking, and if the proper time lapses, so then it falls into this category of lina. The standard example, let's actually read on in the Gemara. My lav, when it says that once it's slaughtered, so lina can become a problem. My lav, linas bosar. The meat being left over, ushma mina, and we can conclude from this migu de posla belina, since the iser lina can set in and affect the meat, the flesh of the animal, posla bo machshava. Let us just use a practical example. Once the parim and nisrafim are slaughtered, one would be expected to burn the meat that very same day, not leave it over till the next day, or even into the night. If he leaves it over and doesn't process it by sundown, so then the chisorin or the psulina has set in. So there is a certain assumption here that since there is a time factor with regard to leaving the meat over, the a mindset concerning time would also have its ill effect, namely the pigul effect. Let's assign a practical example. Let us say, for example, he slaughters the Parim HaNisrafim with the intention of being maktir the emurim at the wrong time, and the result would be that the flesh is nispagel. Here we have an example that would bear out Rebbe Lozer's teaching. He was mifagel be'emurim, the nispagel basar, and we can compare that to that which we saw under Rebbe Lozer's name in the number 3 example on Omid Aleph. There was which appeared 5 lines from the bottom of Omid Aleph. We had an arrow opposite that line where it said pigel be'emurim nispaglu porim, and that's exactly what we're suggesting right now, that if he had a machsheves pigel with regard to the offering of the innards, the meat of the korban would become pigul. The Gemara rejects this and says, loi, linas emurim. The psul lina that was spoken about in the source was a psul lina concerning the innards themselves, and not that the meat would become posel by being left over. Let us look at the Rashi, the few lines down from this point in the Gemara. Lo, linas emurim. Ha de katani de posla, the source that taught that lina is a source of ruination.
Ha'imurim nifsalim belina katani. The source teaches that the innards become ruined by being left over. Uda kafasa dayek mina, and similar to that, infer from the source, demachsheves linas emurim mefageles emurim, that a mindset concerning the emurim will ruin the emurim. In other words, there is no focus on the meat of the Parah Minisrafim whatsoever. So if we take out the meat from the discussion, then we don't have any support to Rebbe Lozer, because Rebbe Lozer was speaking about the meat falling victim to a Machsheves Pigul. The Gemara asks on the rejection. Ha midakotani seifa. Now you'll notice the triangle with the point up is in effect trying to reinstitute the Toshma. The Toshma that we labeled as number 2 was brought in as a support to Rebbe Lozer. So we're trying to reinstitute that support, that approach. The approach which said, let us talk about the meat and not disconnect the discussion from the meat altogether. The question then is, ha midakotani seifa, from the fact that the latter part of this Tanaic source says, Kulon moyalin bohen al beis hadeshen ad sheyutach habosar. This source is focusing on the prohibition of ni'ilo, which we alluded to just a few minutes ago, the prohibition of benefiting from sanctified items. So all of them, the Parah Minisrafim, the Siyam Esrafim, ni'ilo presents itself as a problem, improper benefit from them is a problem. At their burning site, the Beis Hadeshen is the site outside the Beis HaMikdash where these were burnt. In other words, if one benefits from the carcasses of these animals at the Beis Hadeshen, they will involve themselves with a Me'ilah violation, ad sheyutach habosar, until the problem of Me'ilah sets in, until the meat is burnt. Yutach could at times mean is hardened, but in this case we're going to take it to mean until the meat is burnt in the fire, reaches a certain stage of charring, we'll say. So that's the seifa, then focuses, albeit in the with regard to the realm of milah, but it does focus on the meat. So since the seifa focuses on the meat, michlal de reisha, we can infer that the reisha was in fact talking about linas basar, and linas basar was the problem of the meat being left over, and it was from that point that we extrapolated that just like linas basar is a problem of a lapse in time, thoughts concerning lapse in time or thoughts outside of correct time present a problem as well concerning the basar, concerning the meat, which would have supported Rebbe Lozer. The Gemara rejects that. Midi Irya, who says that the topic of the Seifa has to be the same as the topic of the Reisha, Ha Kedi Isa. And the Gemara explains itself. Reisha Emurim, the Reisha which spoke about the Psul Lina, was focusing on the innards. The Seifa, which spoke about the Psul of, or the Isser of Me'ilah, was talking about Basar. That only then, only regard to Me'ilah, was there a willingness to focus on the flesh, on the meat of the animal. At this point, we have a number 3 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. But notice the triangle is flipped over, so that this is a beautiful example of how the markings serve to focus one's concentration and trend of thought. In most Gemaras, the triangles, when you have a back and forth structure, they flip flop, one time up and one time down, one time up, one time down. Notice in this Gemara, the last triangle was with the point facing down, because at that point the Gemara was rejecting the attempt to support Rebbe Lozer. And the next triangle appears is not flipped over. It's with its point continuing to be facing down, because here we're in effect continuing, or we're questioning Rebbe Lozer's approach. So just like the triangle just before was a rejection of an attempt to support him, was in simple terms was not in Rebbe Lozer's favor, this too is not in Rebbe Lozer's favor. Moisiv Rabba, we have the following Tanaic source. V'elu she'ein mefaglin, v'ein mispaglin. The following are examples of things that cannot be the vehicle for creating pigul, nor will, in the event that there was a binding pigul mindset, these items will not become the victim of that pigul mindset. Semer shebaroshei kvosim, the wool on the heads of sheep offerings, the sear shebezekan tiyoshim, on the hair of the beards of goat offerings, the or, the haroy, the or is the skin, varoitiv, the gravy, the hakipa, the shreds of meat that accumulates at the bottom of the pot that the korban is cooked in, the olol, the neck sinews, the hamura, the haatsamos, the bones, the hagidin, the sinews, body sinews, the hakarnayim, the horns, the flafayim, the hooves, the hashlil, the embryo, the hashulya, the placenta, the cholov hamukdoshim, the milk of sacrifices, Ubeitse Torim, the eggs of a bird offering, Kulon lo mifaglin velo mispaglin. Notice it seems a little repetitious, because at the beginning of the source there was a number one that said the same thing, ein mifaglin, ein mispaglin. It sort of repeats itself. All of these things are not the vehicle for creating pigul, nor are they will they fall victim to a pigul mindset that was invoked at the beginning of the korban. The ein chayav amalei mishum pigul. Again, you just said that before. Interesting point. It says it a third time. It says in v'kulan ein chayav mishum pigul noisar v'tamei. The other problems of noisar, of something being left over. And eaten in after the right time, the tome, or problems of impurity, are not problems with regard to the list of items we saw here. V'amale mehen b'chutz poter. If one offers these items on an altar outside of the Beis Hamikdash, will not be in violation of male b'chutz, of offering outside the proper realm. Rashi, you'll notice we have a double star at the first wide line under the Gemara. V'malen mehen b'chutz poter. De'ein ru'uyin lepesach ha'moed. These are things that are not fit to be offered inside the Beis Hamikdash. V'hachi pirusho, my lav. This, of course, Rashi goes on to explain that which the Gemara goes on to say. So let's read the Gemara. My lav lo mefaglin hazevach, v'lo mispaglin machmas hazevach. Let us focus on one example, the case of the shlil. Is it not so that when it says in this source that ein, it says ein mefaglin vein mispaglin, it would mean that if they're not an incorrect mindset concerned, directed on these things, would not be a vehicle for creating pigul for the rest of the korban, nor would they be the victims of a pigul mindset either. Again, the second phrase is extremely important for us. Velo mispaglin, that would mean that if the korban itself was shechted with a pigul mindset, a binding pigul mindset, these things, the shlil, for an example, would not be ruined. That is against Rabbi Elazar. If you were to turn back to Rabbi Elazar's teaching, his number one example was pigel bezevach nispagil hashlil. Here we have exactly that, and it says lo nispagia, velo mispaglim machmazevach. The shlil, which is just one of the many examples that the source provided, we dashed underline that in the source, the shlil would not be a victim. So, as we said, that would be against Rabbi Elazar.
Loi, this is not a kasha on Rabbi Elazar, because we will read the inference, if you will, in a different way. Loi mefaglin es hazevach, velo mispaglin machmas atzmon. Notice, it doesn't say, like it said in the Kasha, that said lo mispaglin, the shlil does not become a victim as a result of a machshava on the zevach. That's not true. The shlil could become a victim as a result of a machshava's pigul on the zevach, in line with Rebbe Elazar. So what is the source teaching me when it says velo mispaglin machmas atzmon? That would be a case where he
let us say he sprinkled the blood or he shechted the korban with the intention of eating the shliel outside of the right time. So where the machshava had been focused on the shliel, so it itself does not become a victim of that machshava. However, an incorrect machshava, pigul machshava concerning the zemach would ruin the shliel, just like Rebbe Lozer. The Gemara asks, "Ihachi." Notice how the triangle is flipped over. This is since the last point was in favor of Rebbe Lozer, here we're going to ask on that. "Ihachi ha dekatani seifa." This is a quote from section from point 2 that was mentioned in the source. "Kulon loy mifaglin veloy mispaglin." Ha su lomali. What do I need this extra clause in the Tanaic source when in fact the same thing was stated at the beginning? So is it not coming to include that the shliel does not become the victim of the machsheves pigul even when the machsheves pigul was on the rest of the korban, on the korban itself? Which in fact is a problem for Rebbe Lozer, because Rebbe Lozer says that if there was a machsheves pigul on the zevach, the shliel would be affected. Here, this clause is saying kulon, all of these things, including the shliel, lo mifaglin velo mispaglin, they wouldn't become the victim even when the machsheva was on the zevach, unlike Rebbe Lozer. So this kasha, this question or problem for Rebbe Lozer is based on what we'd say, what is suggested by this extraneous expression in the source, if not to include that case. The Gemara responds, "Uletamech." According to you that are asking the kashan Rebbe Lozer based on the extraneous clause, what about this extraneous clause, the number 3 point? "Ein chayovin alav mishon pigol hasu lomali." What do I need this extra clause for? This is essentially was information that I could have known already. "Elo I did a boy lemisna noisar vitame." Since at the end of this source, it spoke about that all of the things, all of those examples, starting from the hair on the head, the wool on the heads of the sheep, all the way down and including the shliel. It was necessary to teach concerning those things that there is no problem of nosar nor tomei. So tana pigul, it taught pigul again, just as I by the way, even though that's not the real chiddush. Hachanami, so too, regarding your question from clause number 2, aidi debor lemisni. Since it had to teach Hamale Mehen Bachutz, since it had to teach that new point of Hamale Mehen Bachutz, Tono Nami, it also throws in the expression V'kulan lo mefaglin v'lo mispaglin. This expression appears as well. In other words, to say this or to sum this up in our own words, we have what seems to be repetitious in the source, not like you suggested that the extra expression was there to include the case of the shliel not becoming victim even when there's a machsheves pigul on the zevach, but rather these extra expressions of that there's no problem of pigul are included here because of new points that were introduced along the way. So this was thrown in also. So too, with regard to your kasha, the extra expression is thrown in because of a new point that's mentioned and not to include the case that would have posed a problem to Rebbe Lozer. Rovo Omar, Af Anan Nami Tanina. We have a Tanaic source. Our Mishnah can, in effect, support Shitas Rebbe Lozer, that the shliel and the shilya can become the victim of a machsheves pigul, but they themselves are not the vehicle for creating pigul. the source begins, it's the Tanaic source, you can see it's in a frame.
Hashochet es hamukdashim.
It might be noteworthy that where this quote is coming from, you can see it's from the end of our Mishnah, and in order to make things a little easier to find, so you can see that we have a little asterisk to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with an indication that you will find the corresponding note on Amud Aleph toward the latter part of the Mishnah. So it says in our Mishnah, Hashochet, and we should note also that Rava's comment here lasts a number of lines, and that we've tried to indicate with a length marker that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. The Rava's name appears in a triangle with a vertical dashed line, indicating the length of this support, we'll say, to Rebbe Lozer. Hashochet es hamukdashim, lechol shliul el shilya bachutz, lo pigel. The Mishnah taught that if one slaughters a korban with the intention of eating the shliul or the embryo or the shilya, the placenta, outside the kutchim bounds, he does not create pigel. Amolek es hatorim lechol beitzehem bachutz lo pigel. And one who does malika, which is the form of slaughtering associated with a bird offering, with the intention of eating the eggs of the bird outside of the right place, lo pigel. The Hodar Tani, and it goes on to say in the Mishnah, Cholov Hamukdashim Ubeitse Torim Ein Chayov Aleim Mishum Pigol Noisar V'tomei. So at the end of the Mishnah you have a halacha concerning a number of items. You have the Cholov Hamukdashim and the Beitse Torim. Beitse Torim is featured again, and this time we don't see a mention of shliul or shilya. That leads us to infer, ha shliul v'shilya chayovin. Whereas at the seifa of the Mishnah it says the Beit Seitorim ein chayav l'mishum pigol. We're inferring that the shilya or the shliul and the shilya are chayav mishum pigol. Well, how would you resolve that? And by the way, that's the dot underlined, the dashed underlined expression, ha shliul v'shilya chayavim. You contrast that with that dashed underline which appeared in the source itself, which said lechol shliul shilya b'chutz lo pigel, and here it says chayavim, that there is a problem. Elolav shma mino. Rather, we must conclude it depends. Kan machmas hazevach. If there was pigel on the pigel mindset on the korban itself, so they, the shliul and shilya, will be victim of the incorrect mindset was focused on the basic animal. Kan machmas atzmon. The ptur, where it says in the source that it's lo pigel, is where he slaughtered, where the initial pigel thought was focused on the shliul itself. So the first point of Kan Machmas HaZevach, that is what Rebbe Lozer said, that if one has a pigel mindset concerning the korban, the basic sacrifice, the shliul could be the victim. Tnan Hosam. This is a quote from a discussion from a Mishnah that talks about things that are posel or improper if they are brought up on the Mizbeach. Do they come down? So it says there, Tanan Hasam, Ubali Mumin, blemished limbs, if they are brought up onto the Mizbeach, they are to be brought down. Rabbi Akiva, Machshir Bebali Mumin. Rabbi Akiva says that if limbs of a blemished korban were brought up, they are kosher, in other words, they remain on the Mizbeach and they're not brought down. As Rashi says, im olu lo yerdu.
Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan. Lo hichshir Rabbi Akiva, ela bedukin sheba'ayin. This idea that a blemished sacrifice, his limbs remain on the Mizbeach, we're talking about a very specific type of blemish. It's called dukin shebayin, a type of scratch, if you will, or other minor, we'll say, imperfection or distortion in the eye. And why are we able to overlook the issue of dukin shebayin? Why are we lenient with regard to that type of blemish? Hayaluk sheirin ba'oifos. Since when it comes to bird offerings, dukin shebayin is viewed as absolutely kosher. It's kosher lechatchila. With regard to bird offerings, the type of blemish that renders a bird unfit is a missing limb. But a scratch on the eye would not render a bird offering unfit. And since by a bird offering it would be an acceptable type of offering, in the case of an animal offering, a blemish like that of dukin shebayin, if it's brought up, doesn't come down. Shikidam Hegdeshas Muma, and it's also qualified that the this blemish will be overlooked and left on the Mizbeach, provided the animal was sanctified before the Dukin Shebayin formed or appeared in its eye. First it was sanctified, and then the mum developed later. Umoide Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva will concede that the following, if brought up, comes down, comes off. But oilas nikeva, an ola sacrifice, is brought exclusively from male animals. Let us say someone dedicated a female animal as an ola, and an ola is a type of korban that's completely burnt on the top of the mizbeach. So let us say someone dedicated a female animal as an ola. Rabbi Kiva says it will, if it's brought up to the mizbeach, it is to be brought down. The kaman, the kodam muma lehekdesha dami. That's an example of a situation where the mum developed before it was sanctified. In this case, the gender represents the blemish. A female gender of an ola is a blemish. And as such, it's a case of the mum coming before the hekdesh, and that type of situation where the blemish appears before the sanctification, that is reason for it to be removed from the zveach, even according to Rabbi Akiva, who otherwise is lenient. We have a structure to note. We see a volcano form or trapezoid that appears in our Gemara, and on the side of our Gemara we have a nosei mivne, a topic heading with a structural note combined. The trapezoid form appears, and we've labeled it a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion. With the narrow point facing up, this will represent a kushios, questions. With the cone facing downwards, the narrow part of the volcano facing downwards, tshuvos, answers, responses. Masa umaton, we will have a back and forth discussion, bedinosha Rabbi Akiva, alibud Rabbi Yochanan, focusing on the halacha of Rabbi Akiva as reported by Rabbi Yochanan, but oilas nekeva, regarding the female ola offering, the imolsa tered. Rabbi Yochanan said that Rabbi Kiva would concede that if it's brought up on the Mizbech, it shall be removed, it shall come down. Davei kemumo lefnei hekdesha, being described as an example of something whose blemish appeared before its sanctification. We will also be using a diamond to feature the word ha, which is an expression indicating an inference is being made. Diyukim min hamakor, inferences from the source. Turning to the Gemara. Mosiv Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera raises a question. It lasts a couple of lines, and we've indicated the length of the question by the length marker to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. Mosiv Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks, Hamale mehen bachutz poter. Notice we have an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and so as to help you find where this is coming from. So if we just line up the arrows that we see. We have in this case an extra arrow, three arrows altogether.
we see it's facing to the last line of the source that was cited above, where it mentioned Hamala Mehen Bachutz Potter, one who offers from them, from those things mentioned in the list. We have another arrow facing the line in which the shlil appears. So we can focus on that example, the issue of the embryo. So it says, in Rabbi Zeira quotes from the source, which in effect says that one who offers an embryo outside the Beis HaMikdash, he will be exempt. Now we can infer, ha me'imon chayav. However, if he would offer from the mother, as opposed to the embryo, outside the Beis HaMikdash, he would be guilty of of haktoras chutz, of offering something outside the Beis HaMikdash. Vehechi mishkachas lo, how can you have a situation of the mother being forbidden to be offered outside? Be'oilas nekeva, it must be talking about an ola, a female ola, only a female bears an offspring. So we're inferring the offspring offered outside is not a problem, but the mother of that would be a problem. The issue of offering is a problem that exists only by an ola. For example, if someone were to take shlomim meat, this is a type of korban that's eaten, if one were to take shlomim meat and offer it up on an altar outside the Beis HaMikdash, he wouldn't be chayav this problem of haloas chutz. It's only something that when is chutz a problem? Only if it's expected to be done inside, so that we can use this as a tracing mechanism by noticing how we react to the way halacha, the law regards it's being done outside. We understand how it would be viewed inside. So if we're saying that through the inference here that by offering the mother of the embryo outside the Beis HaMikdash, since we have to be talking about an ola, that would mean that it's something that could have been offered inside. Could have been doesn't necessarily mean l'chatchila that you would bring an olas nekev at the outset, but even the situation of it being left on the mizbeach, and we would tell you leave it there, that's sufficient to show that it's something that's shayach, that's relevant to inside. So let's continue in the Gemara. E amris bishlamo kasover Rabbi Akiva. If you say unlike Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Akiva holds oilas nekeva im also loy teireid, that the limbs of an ola offering that is a female, if it's brought up, it does not come down. That would show us that it's something that is relevant, has a connection to the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, to the inside the courtyard. Ha money, Rabbi Akiva he. The diuk, the diamond expression that was a inference from the source we just read, that would conform to Rabbi Akiva. The inference was that if you were to offer the mother outside, that would be a problem. That would fit in to an approach that would say that the mother, the olas nekeva, if brought up, would stay up. And that would be fine if we can say that thusly Rabbi Akiva would hold, which is unlike Rabbi Yochanan. Elo I amris, if however you're going to say like Rabbi Yochanan, what did Rabbi Yochanan do? Rabbi Yochanan interpreted Rabbi Akiva to say that he said as follows: im al saw teireid, that an olas nekeva, if brought up on the mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, is to be brought down. And as such, if it were done outside the Beis HaMikdash, one ought to be exempt. Then ha money, the source that we said, that we drew an inference from just two lines up, that said there is no exemption for the mother being offered, who would that be according to? Who would be the author of that? The Gemara answers. This is an answer in defense of Rabbi Yochanan's presentation of Rabbi Akiva. Ema, say as follows, what the Gemara does at this point is it rereads the source and will draw a new inference. So how are we going to read the source? Ema, so rather read it as follows, Hamale mehen bachutz poter. This is not a rereading of the source, this is what it said. That if one offered from them, from the shlil, for example, one offered a shlil outside the Beis HaMikdash, one would be exempt. Ha me'emure iman. However, from the innards of the mother, one, if he offered them outside, he would be chayav. And in this case, we're not focused on an ola, because when you talk about the innards, that is something that's characteristic of shlomim or a chatos as well. The innards of a shlomim, for example, are offered on the inside mizbeach. Therefore, if they're done outside the Beis HaMikdash, that would result in guilt, in a chiyuv. Now, if we just use the markings, before we had a diamond around Ha Me'imon Chayav. At that point, the inference represented a kasha on Rabbi Akiva, because by suggesting that by offering the mother of the shliel outside, that would be an olas nikeva, that would result in guilt. That would have been a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Here, we're not making that inference, but rather we're saying that one who would offer the innards of the mother of the shliel outside the Beis HaMikdash, that would result in a chiyuv. But we're not talking about the flesh. We're not talking about an olas nekeva. We're talking about a shlomim or a chatos. Hence, no kasha on Rabbi Yochanan's approach to Rabbi Kiva, because Rabbi Yochanan's approach to Rabbi Kiva was focusing on and the limbs of an olas nekeva. We're not talking about an olas nekeva at all. Question. V'ha mehen kotoni. Rashi explains that the term mehen, which was in the original source, which it said, for example, at the beginning of line, we have a quote, hamala mehen, that's mashma from the flesh of the shliel. So that the inference should also concern the flesh of whatever we're inferring. Notice this, with the volcano form, with the narrow part facing up, represents a reinstating of the question. V'ha mehen kotoni ve'ima dumya ditu. When the source said that one who offers the meat of the embryo outside, that would be exempt. Mashma, the inference being, one who offers the meat of the mother outside, he would be chayav. And that problem arises only with regard to an ola, because the ola of the nekeva, the ola of a shlomim would not be a problem, outside. Let's read this objection again. V'ha mehen kotoni. The source emphasizes the flesh of the embryo, and then the inference would be v'imon dumya didhu. When you're talking about the mother, we're not going to be talking about the innards of the mother. We're talking about the flesh of the mother, and that if the flesh of the mother offered outside, that would be a problem. And by saying that that's a problem, we're indicating that inside the Beis HaMikdash, that would be something that, if brought up on the mizbeach, should be left there. Unlike Rabbi Yochanan's take on Rabbi Akiva. Defense. Elo Emo. Rather, restate the inference as follows. Notice what we've done. If you focus carefully on the markings, we have this dashed underline under Emo. This corresponds to the dashed lining, the dashed underline, two lines up at the end of line, at which point the Gemara was bringing a defense for Rabbi Akiva's shita as presented by Rabbi Yochanan. Here we have a new presentation of that, of the defense. Elo emo hamala me emure hen bachutz poter. Here we have, in fact, a restatement. The end of the source above, when it spoke about mala mehen, it doesn't mean one who offers the shliel itself, but rather one who offers the innards of the shliel, the innards of the embryo outside. That's putter, because that's not something that that would be done inside. However, the inference ha me a murei iman, and that's something, the innards of the mother, if offered outside, that would result in a chiyuv of haloas chutz. And when you talk about emure imon, just like we explained the line above, we're talking about shlomim or chatos, and we're not talking whatsoever about a korban ola. And hence, the source is not to be brought in as a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan's presentation of Rabbi Kiva. That would have been a kasha only if you can infer something about the
the limbs of the animal itself, or the meat of the animal itself being offered outside. But we're not talking about that. The inference is talking about the innards of the mother offered outside. And as since we're talking about the innards, we can be talking about a korban shlomo mechatos and not talking about an ola at all, which saves Rabbi Yochanan's presentation of Rabbi Akiva. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.